This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Today's conversation is with Dr. Peter Bach, first author on an analysis of the benefits and harms of using low-dose computed tomography to screen for lung cancer. The analysis appears in JAMA. Dr. Bach is with the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. Welcome, Dr. Bach.
Thank you for having me.
Your recommendations, in essence, say that people between the ages of 55 and 74 with a 30-pack year history of smoking and who either are still smoking or have quit within the past 15 years may benefit from annual low-dose CT screening. Is that a fair...
Yeah, absolutely. It's not my recommendation or even of the panel that wrote the paper. It's the recommendation of some major medical organizations who asked us to do this, including the American College of Chest Physicians, the American Society for Clinical Oncology, and the American Thoracic Society. And what we recommend is we essentially argue that we suggest that the scanning is offered to patients.
Mm-hmm.
And in that offer, it's incredibly important that the potential benefits are properly presented as well as the potential harms.
Mm-hmm.
And that is substantially different and probably more conservative than suggesting that it be performed. Really think that trade-off of risks and benefits are very close to call, and that certainly some individuals will view the benefits more than the harms, and some individuals will see it the other way around.
Well, the benefit of screening with low-dose CT was modest, as you say. It's a close call when you compare it with radiographic screening. The absolute mortality benefit was less than 1% in a high-risk population. Can you talk a little bit about the implications of that?
Well, sure. So in the National Lung Screening Trial, where high-risk smokers were screened each time for 3 years, including that period of screening and about 3 more years of follow-up, or a total of 6 years, for every 1,000 individuals who were screened with CT, 3 lung cancer deaths were prevented. That means 0.33% of people benefited from being screened. And at first blush, that seems like a low number, but doctors are well aware, although they sometimes maybe stop thinking about it, that screening is a highly inefficient enterprise. It's always the case that most people you screen for disease won't have the disease or ever develop the disease. And so lung cancer is an example of that. Even in this enriched population of heavy smokers, most people weren't even going to develop lung cancer in the first place, and then screening itself isn't that effective at preventing death. Only about 1 in 5 lung cancer deaths were prevented through the intervention.
Well, you call the low-dose CT screening, and I'm quoting you, a clinical intervention in its infancy. So it's an intervention that's getting a lot of attention. Do you hope that the recommendations that you were doing the analysis for will confine the use of this technology to the groups who will most likely benefit from it for the time being?
Certainly what we're recommending is that the technology is confined to that group. And beyond that, we're recommending that individuals who fit the criteria, you know, who are heavy smokers and in that age group of 55 to 74, that the risks and benefits are really clearly explained to them, because we anticipate that some of these individuals will decide it's not worth the 20% per year risk of false positives. It's not worth the risk of excess radiation, even though the damage from the radiation is in an order of magnitude less, we think, than the potential benefit, and they may feel like, you know, it's not worth the hassle and the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're not recommending that people like this be screened. What we're suggesting is that screening is offered to them in a balanced way so that individuals can make their own decisions. There are medical interventions that are, if you will, no-brainers,
mm-hmm.
where we wouldn't suggest that the procedure be offered. We would suggest that it be performed. the flu vaccine as an example, the pap smear when appropriately done as an example. We're nowhere close to that strong conviction around screening because the magnitude of the benefit is not huge. And we know there are harms and they're difficult to quantify and balance. And so we really think different individuals will conclude different things if these things are clearly described to them.
One of the notes within the recommendation is that people have this screening performed, if they have it performed, at a facility that's prepared to interpret the scan, to act on the results, and to treat cancers. Now, there seem to have sprung up over time clinics or facilities that offer lung cancer screening with CT. It seems that those places would fall outside those recommendations because they're not prepared to do all of the things that you recommend. Is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, it's important to appreciate why we made that recommendation. And the first reason was those are the only kinds of settings where screening has been shown to be beneficial. Mm-hmm. The big NCI study was largely done in facilities like that, many of which were actually designated by the National Cancer Institute as cancer centers. So a special breed of place, if you will.
Yeah.
But not only is this an artifact of the data and where the studies were done, it's also a good deal of both prior related research and intuition going into this recommendation. We've known for more than a decade that outcomes regarding lung cancer surgery are substantially better at high-volume teaching hospitals with much lower mortality rates and lower complication rates. We know that when biopsies are performed, that if they're performed in experienced hands, the yield is higher and the complication rates are lower. And then many of the panelists, in fact, I think maybe all of them, with one exception or two, are practicing clinicians. And we've all experienced the problems when abnormalities are seen on CT scan that wouldn't raise the concerns or hackles of a doctor who'd seen a lot of CT scans but caused panic and moves to biopsies and other sorts of diagnostic tests more quickly amongst people who are less confident and experienced and therefore is harder for them to be conservative. And that is, of course, one of the big risks, that too many things that are not particularly dangerous will be chased and procedures will be done on patients or on individuals that need not be. And because of that, 1 in 5 patients have a false positive when they have a CT scan. We think it makes a lot more sense if we try and develop our approach to screening into a systematic way in centers that have the experience, expertise, and multidisciplinary kind of strategies that are most likely to achieve that.
The data from your analysis, about half of it or more, come from the National Lung Screening Trial, the NLST. And you imply that more analyses of that data are on the way. Do you think they're likely to answer some of the questions that you pose at the end of the article about cost-effectiveness, over-diagnosis, et cetera?
It depends on the endpoint you're looking at, but we reviewed multiple studies, including 8 randomized trials mm-hmm. and 13 studies that were done without a control group. NLST was an important study, particularly on the endpoint of all-cause mortality and lung cancer-specific mortality. But even on that one, there were 2 other randomized trials that were relevant. So it's true the NLST mattered, but we reviewed all of the literature and tried to incorporate all of it. The expectation is that the trials that are being done in Europe right now, from which there are only preliminary reports, but ultimately they'll have estimates of the mortality reduction from CT screening as well as the harms, as well as reanalyses of the NLST data that are going to be conducted by an NCI-funded group called CISNET, mm-hmm. Should tell us a lot more than we know now. One of the important questions will be, what is the impact in other groups? And a related question is, what is the impact across individuals who are substantively different who were eligible for the NLST? There's people who got into the NLST who had relatively lighter and relatively heavier smoking histories and therefore different risks of lung cancer. And the benefits can only be present amongst individuals who would develop lung cancer and die of it otherwise. And so it's going to be important to realize that, you know, with more work, we're going to have a much better sense, I hope, of exactly which individuals we should screen, how big the expected benefits are versus the risks, and exactly which individuals it just doesn't make sense to screen. Right now, we're stuck only with the one set of parameters, which is what allowed patients into the NLST.
For clinicians who wonder what they might do differently as a result of this analysis, what would be the one or two things you would want them to do differently next week when patients show up with these smoking histories or ask about CT scanning?
Well, so the data suggests actually that doctors right now don't even collect smoking histories in any sort of granular way. So I think the first step would probably be for doctors to, you know, develop a system and approach. It could be at registration or it could be during the visit, where a good smoking history is taken so that a doctor could determine if an individual patient would even be eligible for screening, or that at least that we'd suggest be screened. The next issue is for a doctor who's going to do this, they should probably do the work proactively to determine where to send the patient, you know, assuming that the recommendation we provide is followed, that the patient should go to places that have the sort of expertise that the centers in the NLST had.
All right. Well, that's good advice, and I want to thank you, Dr. Bach, for spending time with me this afternoon.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
That was our 156th edition, and all the earlier ones may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, whose website is jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Schurer and I thank you for listening.